Yeah, if you wanted us to build a tri-pin on top of that, I wouldn't have a problem doing that, no. No. Yeah, but you haven't been dealing with Access Unlimited for very long. You could call us up, and if we look at it, if we look at it and we say, gosh, there's a market for that, we'll build one for you. I mean, we're not, our conception to production time is a lot shorter than, Braun or MPD or anything like that. If we see something, somebody calls us up and you say, you send me a little diagram, you say, Tom, this is what I want, Chances are I'll build it for you and I'll thank you for it because probably somebody else needs that. All of the really good ideas for our products come from the people who recommend them and who install them. Most of the really, really hot ideas just come from people who are saying, you know what, I need this, and we say, okay, we'll build it. And then guess what? That becomes a new market for us. So, if you needed a tri-pin tomorrow, well, chances are we'd probably build one for you. It would have to have a little hole in the middle so that you can, operate the release. And we already have a collar that hangs on to the spinner knob. That solid mounts on the spinner knob that we do not have them readily available. We actually built one. We did build one. But it's, it's just a prototype. Could we build another one? Probably 3 weeks' notice, yes. And we would have to make some improvements on it. We weren't exactly happy with it. So, anyway. Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah, right, yeah. 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 We wouldn't leave you high and dry if it was somebody who started with a mini touch. They're going to end with a mini touch, and we'll engineer around it. What the problem that you have is weight, because this is heavier when you add the tri-pin on. Then this was the conclusion that we came to. It's when you add the tri-pin on to the knob, it becomes heavier than it needs to be. You see, and that was what we weren't very happy about. So, once we kind of, what we really have to do is engineer a new knob and the insert. And actually, the insert and the holding device in there is quite complex. It's not a simple thing, so we have to basically re-machine that whole thing, or figure out a way for the few that we sell to just chop the existing knob off and make it all work right and sell it at a price that can make everybody money, So that's our issue there. Okay. Functionality-wise, you remember, Greg, that I said we need to think about who's using this. Okay, who's using this? 60% of the time, if not more, is going to be strokes. Okay? In other words, they got a left arm, but or a right arm, but it doesn't work. Okay? That's and increasingly that's where this market is really going. It's going towards a lot of folks with strokes. Well, people with strokes have strengths and weaknesses. Sometimes layout of things is a weakness. Okay, it's something that you lose in a stroke. The automatic knowledge of where things are and the ability to evaluate a space and decide where your muscle activity is going to occur. Okay, so that means that you and me, we need to get together and figure out what is the order of preference for easy access. Okay, and we need to study the angle of the person's fingers, okay, and think about which are the easiest to access, and therefore how do we want to place the buttons. Okay, how do we want to make the arrangement of the buttons, and I'm referring to the installation instructions. Okay. Exactly. So I'm going to tell you based on experience which ones tend to be the easiest to access, okay? And primarily we're going to be dealing with six functions, so let's talk about a six function, okay? And you have to weigh two things, okay? There is frequency of use, okay? And there is urgency of use. What is the number one most urgent button that you would need to access? Function. There you go. Bingo. Okay. What is the second most important urgency function? Think again. Close. Wash. Because it's that quick sweep of the windshield so you can see what's going on. Okay? So, number one urgency is going to be the horn. Number two urgency is going to be wash. Okay? Typically, when you put your hand on that, look at the picture on the brochure. That's a pretty typical hand situation going on there. Okay, that's a very comfortable arm angle. It's a typical arrangement. And you can see that the easier functions to access are the upper two buttons, inward motion, or outward motion, rather. Okay, those are the two quickest to get on and not miss. Okay, so typically center, but then again, they're certainly not the most frequently accessed functions, but they are certainly important, and when you need them, you need them, and you don't want to be thinking about it, okay? So typically, we'll make center towards the outside the horn button. Typically, that's what you'll do. Outside, I'm talking with respect to the center of the steering wheel, okay? Going towards the outside of the steering wheel. Typically, that will be one of them. Typically, you will also do wash upper towards the outside. Okay. Now, what are the most popular functions? What do you do more than anything? What you know? Turn signals. What's the other real typical function? Real popular function. Anything to do with the lights? Typically, the horn, the dimmer. Okay, so those are also important, and they're, you know, they need to be very easy to get at because you're going to be doing it all the time, okay? All right, now just, I want you to put your hand right on that spinner knob and just imagine that you're on a steering wheel, okay? Just kind of move your fingers, okay? Turns out that your thumb can reach down and nab the bottom right switch. Okay, so that's an easily accessible function. Okay, there you go. That now you're talking. You're going to take information that you have about the client and make intelligent decisions here. If guess what, his thumb works real well, and let's say his index finger works less well, and his middle finger hardly works at all. Okay, some sort of neuro guy. Okay, you're going to be rethinking this whole process. Okay. Typically, pulling in with your thumb is pretty easy to do. So you might want to put one of the more popular functions on that direction. Pushing with your thumb turns out is not quite as easy, okay, because your thumb doesn't have the fine motor function, okay? But pulling with your thumb is not too bad, okay? Pushing with your index finger, as long as it's far enough away, okay, is also pretty easy. So upper, out, is also a pretty easily accessible function. The two more difficultly accessible functions are, I'm sorry, upper towards the center of the steering wheel. Okay, upper towards the center of the steering wheel is a little bit, you know, is pretty easy to do. Okay, so you might assign, the turn signals, of course, are going to have to be opposite one another. Otherwise, things get a little crazy, okay? You know, you want to have the turn signal on the same button, even though it's just because in your mind it makes it easier, okay? So, you know, you might take typical arrangement might be outward motion on the thumb would be, let's say, high-low, okay? Upper one might be turns right and left, and even though that's a combination of, you know, ease of use, you know, it takes you, you know, at counter purposes here, because we'd kind of like to keep the turn signals together, but then again, the outboard, you know, outside of the wheel top switch is also the easiest to access. Okay, so we were going to hopefully put the washers on there. Well, you know, again, you got to kind of assess the client. I'm not going to give you a hard and fast way to do it. I'm just going to give you the tools and the information. You make an intelligent decision. Okay? Inward bottom switch and inward middle switch tend to be the least easy to do. Okay? Because it requires extensor function on your index finger, and you got to, and that's not something that, you know, like, just take your finger and stick it up in the air, okay? Not your middle one, Scotty. I know you well enough now. I have never met you, but I got an idea what you're made of. Okay, now just take your middle finger, okay, and kind of curl it down. Okay, that's a nice easy thing to do, right? But taking it and kind of straightening it way out, okay, towards the outside, not quite as easy to do, right? It's not as easy. Okay, so again, think about those things. Okay. Can you hold on for 1 second, please? Yes. Yes. You're leaving right now? Okay. Well, I want to talk to you before you leave. All right. I'm going to be a couple minutes on this training as soon as I'm done. Yes, you certainly will. Take a bunch of them. I'm talking about another 15 minutes, Mark. Okay. I definitely want to talk to you, and you're probably going to have to go down and cash a check or something before you go. Okay. Okay, sirs. So bear in mind that information, okay? Think about it, make your switch assignments. Okay. Hooking it up. There are some value judgments to be made here. Okay? When you hook it up, if you want to hook it up to the ignition control, as indicated in the instructions, that works out nice. However, there are sometimes, for example, if your hazard lights, if your evaluator included your hazard lights in the arrangement, guess what? You need to hook it up to continual on. Okay? However, you will need to let your client know that there is a potential for ever so slight battery drain. Because when you have activated a function with the Mini Touch, it is a solid state device, but it still, you know, draws a little bit of current while the function is activated. And it draws a smidgen of current all the time. Very, very small amount, you know, because it's enough to activate the receiver. So again, here we have a value judgment that you need to make about, you know, what should we be doing here? Okay, should we be hooking it up? Most of the time, if you get your standard, what we call the six pack, okay? Turns, high-low, wipe wash, horn. That's your standard six-pack. Okay? Standard six-pack, you're almost always going to hook to the ignition. Add something like hazards or add headlights on and off, okay, which need to be, a lot of times the guy wants to be able to see out long after he shut the ignition off, right? So if you add any of those functions, now you need to think about hooking it to the battery. Later on, when we get into diagnostics, okay, we're going to need to think about what other functions might, what other reasons might you have for connecting directly to the battery. And basically, they have to do with inductive discharge and spikes and things like that. Dirty power, basically. Okay. You've dealt with that with electronics, right, where you have a dirty power supply can cause all sorts of crazy things to happen. Yep. You know, just the power supply is throwing out all sorts of noise, and guess what, you know? You got a problem, man. Okay, so now we understand switch arrangement, okay, power supply. Obviously, you are going to solder as much as you can. For your connections on your relay pack side, blade connectors are okay for the Mini Touch, from the Mini Touch to the Crescent relay packs. Okay, it is acceptable, and if Namita gives you any crap about it, you know, you refer back to the old manufacturer said I could. And the reason is because we need those to be able to be broken apart for diagnostic purposes. Can't be soldering this crap all together, you know. And we have not had any reports of corrosion or anything like that. We're not in an area where there's going to be a, you know, hopefully it's not going to be raining under the dashboard, you know. Of course, if you put it directly underneath the air conditioning condenser, I guess I'd have to say you void your warranty. We've had people do all sorts of crazy things. The best one was wrapping the receiver around a motor. That was a good one. Coming up with all sorts of crazy stuff. Well, where do you have this located? Well, I couldn't find any place to put it down. I put it right on the fan motor. Okie dokie doke. So, in any case, just to give us an idea of where we're at, try to locate it away from any EMI source. Okay, you understand what we mean by EMI, Greg? Electromagnetic interference. You were almost there. Scott told me, though, in a private conversation, he said we're lucky if you know which is the business end of a screwdriver. He said something like that. I'm not sure what he meant. Well, the first few times you pierced your hand, right? You figured that out. Well, the worst sales guys are the ones who think they can turn a wrench, you know? Uh-oh. Who would do a thing like that? Ooh. Have you heard of the Darwin Award, Scotty? I get a regular email on that one. It just blows my mind, some of the things. The best one was the guy who hooked himself up to a 10 or 15 weather balloons. Yeah, with a lawn chair, and then when he was going to shoot him down when he got up there, and of course he went up so fast he dropped his gun. He ended up floating into the L.A. airport airspace and got arrested. Anyway, okay, so basically, as far as hooking up your power supply, make sure that you attach to an area where it's not like right down the street from something that's creating a lot of EMI or even a lot of spikes. Spikes tend to be what will stun a mini-touch, okay? Every motor, every relay, when it releases, has what's called inductive discharge. Okay, when a coil shuts off, it sends a spike. For a regular automotive relay, it can be something like 60 to 70 volts, okay, right back up the wire where it came from. When we go to diagnose problems like these, we may put a shunt relay, because usually it will send the spike out in the opposite direction of the normal current. Okay, so we will sometimes put a shunt relay. Sometimes we'll put a massive capacitor like you do for audio systems. Okay, but the first line of defense is going to be we're gonna move it. Okay, we're gonna, you know, just put it farther upstream, and sometimes we got to work our way up to the battery. So thus we have reason number two for connecting power full time, is to get away from inductive discharge and other dirty power that may emanate from other parts of the car. Okay, and sometimes we get this chat that goes on between the Mini Touch and Rex's relay packs, particularly when the Mini Touch is constantly being stunned by something else in the vehicle. Okay, if we get away from the dirty power source and work our way upstream, we tend to get far enough away, and that's the first line of defense when we have a really screwed up system, okay, where just, you know, you separate the two guys out and they're both behaving. You put them together and they don't behave, okay? So, obviously, I'm going to skip the whole part about, you know, what's the first line of defense when you have a problem. Let's say that you have a mini touch that's activated, okay, and it's continually sending out a signal. You correctly identified the first thing you do is shut the car off, okay? Turn it back on, pull each of the functions off, okay, until you get the thing to stop misbehaving, okay? Identify the output from the Mini Touch that tells you, you know, that corresponds to that function that's being continually activated, okay? And see if when you separate them out, Does it continue to send a signal? If it does continue to send a signal, continue disengaging other functions of the mini-touch, because guess what? One of the functions could be stunning the mini-touch. Okay? Keep on separating them out. When you've got the two totally separated and the damn thing is still misbehaving, then you've got a problem. You can then reprogram the mini-touch. Okay? It's like taking the mini-touch and saying, Mr. Transmitter, meet the receiver. Mr. Receiver, meet the transmitter. Okay? You do this by pressing down on the reprogram button, which is located, there's an access hole through the case. You stick a pencil or you stick a little something in there that's not metal, okay? A little plunger of some sort, a toothpick or something like that, in the receiver. Yep. Press, okay, you, let's see, let me go back to my notes here. I'm sorry? Might be, yeah, I haven't looked at it in a while. I don't actually do things. I just train. That's not true, but it sounds good. Okay, so press down on the button. Locate the synchronization button. Okay. Obviously, turn the vehicle on. Hold the program down button for 1 second. Release it for 1 second. Activate any transmitter button that corresponds to a wire that you're measuring. Okay, typically it'll be the one that's misbehaving. Okay, activate the transmitter button for 1 second, then release the transmitter button for 1 second, then hold the same button for 4 seconds. Okay? Yep, that deals with this. Yep, okay. That's the, you must have the updated instructions. Okay. Well, you know, it's called a stealth documentation. Release as little information as you possibly can. So that way, if the less information we give you, the easier it is for us to blame it on you when something goes wrong. You see that? What you'll find out about us is we're like just like all the other manufacturers, except we're more open about it. Okay, so you go through that process, and let's say that you still got a malfunction. Okay, is it the transmitter or is it the receiver? Well, you can't always tell. You may have an RMA type of situation, but one thing you can certainly tell is check the color and the regularity of the transmitter LED. That tells you a whole lot about the battery condition of the mini-touch transmitter. Okay? You should see a regular frequency fluttering, okay? And it should not dim out as you're pressing it, and it should be bright red. Okay, for the earlier units, I think they were green. There's some green ones and there's some red ones. But all Christmas colors. So anyway, that's one way to do it. The battery cycle is about 20,000 activations. Okay, but you can have situations like in Northern California where, you know, you get a heavy frost and this and that, and the battery was already kind of whooped anyway. You know, that's something that could, you know, be an issue. So you basically suspect the battery first. Okay, if you do have reason to suspect the battery, go in there, check the terminals for corrosion. Terminals look okay, put the cover back on, or replace the battery. That's the cheapest way. It is, you can get it in a fancy watch shop. It's not a very common battery, but it is available. If not, you just get them from us. Pay more money. Okay, so you've checked out the transmitter. You did the synchronization process. You're getting a bad output no matter what you do. You've got to call Access Unlimited. Okay? Now, the question then becomes, why did this happen? Mini-touches generally do not just misbehave on their own. Okay? The failure rate for the mini-touch itself is pretty low. Okay? So, you know, again, this is where we in EMC, we sit down every year and we decide how we're going to not accept blame for anything, you know? But it's true that the MiniTouch really has a very low failure rate from internal problems. Okay, generally what it is you're getting a big shock from something outside. So you may, as a precautionary measure, should you ever have an RMA situation, chances are Access Unlimited will take care of you, but not three times in a row. Okay, so what you'll want to think about is, gosh, this thing is getting stunned. Rex has opto-isolators. You know what those are? Opto-isolators is an optical bridge that basically separates out the trigger circuits from his circuitry. It does not separate the trigger circuits out from dirty power. So we've got either, chances are we have either dirty power coming from Rex's system, or we have dirty power coming from our power source. But it's one of the power sources that just got dirty power. And so you need to look around and say, what could possibly be causing that? And again, creep farther up the ladder to try to get cleaner power. Or if that doesn't work, again, you know, diode shunts and capacitors. And I'm dealing with, you know, the 5% of the situations, but I want you to be prepared so that if you do run into this situation, you're educated, okay, and you know what to do. No, it's not. As I said, you know, maybe 4 or 5% of the time you'll run into something like that because you've got... But the problem is that, right, but the problem is that it forces your client to have to shut each system down so that as soon as they turn their vehicle on, the turn signal will still be activated or something like that. So it's not as good for the client. And this is a real minority of the cases. I would say we've run into this. We sell a lot of mini touches. I mean, we sell a lot of mini touches. I would say maybe three times we've run into serious problems like this, where we work down to that level. And we've run into some occasional systems, you know, to times when it's really hard to say what was really the cause of it and it never recurred, you know. So I don't really have good hard statistics, but it's just something to take a look at. And we are looking at building more, you know, actually we do have, I believe, we do have a diode shunt inside now. But you know, sometimes you have another one. It can help out a little bit. You know, we can't make everything, you know, real heavy duty and fit it all in the same box there. So anyway, moving on down the line, we know because we have opto isolators, we are not going to get stunned by anything that is coming through the wiper circuit itself or the turn signal circuit itself. Rex has protected us against that. Okay, so diagnostic-wise, okay, you separate it out, you're having a problem with the mini-touch, you work through the process I just gave you, you determine it's either is or isn't the mini-touch, okay? Obviously, the way to test Rex's relay packs is good old negative, you know, negative wire there, click, 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 see if everything's working fine on Rex's packs. If you're having a problem with Rex's packs, call Rex. You bet. You are clearly experienced in matters of crescentness. Okay. But basically, diagnostic-wise, that's what you need to know. You should know a little bit about what is going on inside of the MiniTouch. You ever heard of code hopping remotes? You know what I'm talking about? No, different. I know what you're talking about there. What this is we have a language that the transmitter and the receiver speak. Both the transmitter and the receiver are really transceivers. Okay? The transmitter sends out a signal in code 1. the receiver knows what the next signal is that's going to come out from the mini touch, from the transmitter. So it says it receives a signal in the right code and says, okay, that's from my mini touch transmitter. I'm gonna say that that's probably from for the right signal, and it sends out a confirmation back to the transmitter. The transmitter says, yep, that's what I sent you, and sends a confirmation back to the receiver. Okay? All this happens in a fraction of a second. But the next time it sends a signal out, both receiver and transmitter know that we hop codes. So we change codes each and every time. So the code for the next time that it sends out a signal is different. You see what I'm saying? So it's called code hopping technology. So somebody who walks over there with a receiver and records exactly what the mini touch sent out, okay, can't come up to that vehicle again and activate it because it's not time 3042. It's time 3044. You see what I'm saying? So it's called code hopping technology. What it means is it has a code, it's encrypted, so it can't be just some rampant, EMI signal just pops in there and messes everything up, okay? It's not going to activate the mini-touch. No way, Jose. Because, first of all, because we have a code. But second of all, nobody can learn the code. So if a thief is in a parking lot, not that he'd want to turn the guy's turn signals on, it can't possibly happen because it's hopping codes all the time. But this is how they can get out of synchronization. Because if one of them believes that it's hopped a code and the other one says, no, we haven't hopped a code, you're sending out the wrong code. Hell with you, I'm not going to respond. That's what synchronization is about. This is why, Scott, we wanted to pop the hood open and show you what's going on underneath. That's why we need synchronization. Okay, because once in a while they can get one can think for some reason that it got something got screwed up inside the circuit there and it sent out a confirmation signal when it shouldn't have or something like that. That's what synchronization. No, the garage door opener can never do the trick. It can't. Okay. Alrighty. Next thing is there really isn't any next thing. Basically, when you hook it up, is it okay to bundle it to a bunch of wires going by? Yes, it is. Okay, as long as they're, not real noisy wires. And what you'll tend to do is you can kind of wire tie it like a bridge between two wiring harnesses or something like that. Because in the real world, Scott, you may not have a nice panel that you can easily get your screwdriver into. And our goal here is to keep our mini-touch installation time for the mini-touch itself to 2 hours or less. Okay, well, you can't do that if you got to be spending 2 hours digging around wiring harnesses. So it is okay to hook directly to a wiring harness, okay? But you don't want to do it so that the wiring harness goes right through the middle of the circuitry. You do it to the tabs on the outer ends. Because obviously the closer to the wire, we don't know what's going on in those wires, the closer to the wire, the stronger the magnetic field is for the wire. Because there are parts of the internal circuit that are not foolproof, that are subject to EMI when you're right on top of it. Okay? That's basically it, guys. Okay? All I need for you to do to complete your certification is to call me back as soon as you got it done, which I'm going to be gone, so it'll be tomorrow morning. Review how things went. Ask any questions, Q&A, and we're all set. Okay. No problem. Don't bother labeling it. No, you can take this little diagram right here. And you can give it to the client. The client is not going to be able to look at the steering wheel while driving. That's not recommended. These are in-motion functions, remember. It's up to the client to memorize the locations of the functions. You give them the cheat sheet, to help them out. And you can make them with one of those little label makers, but they fall off. And we tried putting it on a special label, and it turned out that nobody looked at them anyway. Client just needs to memorize it. All righty. Yes, we decided not to go there. That's correct. Yeah. Well, I can't say that we don't have good support. I used to say that we didn't have good support from our Southern California dealers, and I can't say that anymore because we do now. But it was just a question of just time and energy, and money plays in a little bit, but it was really just the time and energy to go out there, and we have a dealer out there who is in the process of violating our patent and is showing a product that's in violation. Bruce Brothers and a company called the Able Lift or something like that. Yeah, it's, you know, Bruce Brothers. He's the guy who was on TV for fraud and all that kind of stuff. And he was our distributor for a while, and then we fired him as our distributor, and then he doing a knockoff of the Multi-Lift. And so, yeah, that's the character. Yep. He's a doozy. Yeah.